listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Catch Them Doing Something Good edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to noon, my guests and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, today I'm going to do something a little bit different, and I've been pulling up various current events. And I came across something, and I really want to talk about it just a little bit, and mainly I want your comments. I want to talk a little bit about the dangers of running away. I pulled an article off the wire service a couple of days ago, and I just felt compelled to share it. So I'm going to read this to everybody, and it goes like this. It says, a 24-year-old man has been found guilty of first-degree murder in the death of a 14-year-old runaway foster child, a crime he was accused of committing with his father. Dustin Moyer, 24, was sentenced last Tuesday night to life in prison for the 2005 death of Chelsea Acorn, a teenage girl who ran away from a Fraser Valley group home. Moyer's father, 56-year-old Jesse West, faces the same charges but will stand trial separately at a later date. The teen disappeared in June of 2005, and her body was found in April of 2006 by two hikers in a shallow grave in a remote spot off a highway. Moyer and West, long-distance truckers, were arrested in 2007. Police said Moyer sometimes accompanied his father on long-distance truck trips. The prosecution argued that the pair planned to kill Chelsea, with whom they had sex with, took her to a campsite, strangled her, buried her body, and covered her with rocks. Last week, Moyer took the stand and pointed the finger of blame directly at his father, telling the Supreme Court, quote, "I do what my dad tells me." I need to tell you that this bothers me on so many levels that I don't even want to really go into it that much right now. But what I do want is your comments. Now, to do so, you can go to our blog at www.answers4thefamilyblog.com. You'll see the comments section. When I started reading this, and my thought was I wanted to mention out there for everybody to, remind their children that there are people out there, remind them that the concept of running away and hitchhiking, you may not find something better than what you think you're running away from. But as I read this, the other issues here, the parenting of the father that decides that he's going to involve his son with this, all of these things. I want your comments, if you can email them in, and I think at a later show I want to discuss some of those comments and put those on the air as well. So, and I'm sorry, I feel like I'm sort of starting everybody on a little bit of a downer, but I do want to now share the fact that there are programs out there that the kids can go to. For some of you parents that are new to this, there are programs, and fortunately, our guest today is going to be able to tell us a little bit about them. Now, our guest today is Joanna Bettman. Joanna is the research director at Open Sky Wilderness Therapy, a wilderness program for troubled teens and young adults based out of Durango, Colorado. She is also an assistant professor of social work at the University of Utah. She received her bachelor's degree from Dartmouth College, her master's in social work from the University of Utah, and her PhD from Smith College School of Social Work. She is also a licensed clinical social worker and maintains a private practice in Salt Lake City. Dr. Bettman researches attachment and treatment outcomes in a range of populations, and her work has been published in Clinical Social Work Journal, the Journal of American Psychoanalytic Association, the Journal of Child and Adolescent Social Work, the Journal of Therapeutic Schools and Programs, along with many other journals. She has presented both nationally and internationally on this subject, and serves as the love doctor on the Utah Fox affiliate. Joanna, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm very appreciative to have you at this time, hopefully I didn't steer people in the wrong direction by telling that story, but I read that this weekend, and I just really felt like I needed to get it out there, and I hope to get more input at a later time.
Now, yeah, it's a pretty disturbing story.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that, I mean, we have a lot of parents that email in questions, and in fact, I have some of those questions, but the questions that I've gotten tells me that there are a lot of new parents out there that haven't listened to the show that are asking questions like, what is wilderness therapy? So if we can start with that, let's kind of give them an overview. Tell us what wilderness therapy is and how it differs from conventional therapy.
Sure. So wilderness therapy has a lot in common with traditional forms of therapy, so I'll sort of start there. So it looks a lot like traditional therapy in that the good wilderness therapy programs have master's or doctoral level clinicians, therapists, who sit and talk with adolescents or young adults about the problems that they're having in a similar way that you would find in outpatient therapy. The difference is that this treatment is taking place in the context of a residential program, and that whole residential program is taking place outside. And so different wilderness therapy programs have different models. Some use a base camp, some are sort of primitive cabins, and some are camping entirely in the wilderness. And programs use a range of approaches, but what's common to all wilderness therapy programs is that they're all happening outside, and that they're using in their approach sort of what look like traditional both individual and group therapy approaches. It's happening in the context of wilderness, which brings so many other factors in. So being in a wilderness setting challenges most of our students, almost all of whom are coming from urban settings. And so those kids are really challenged to learn a whole new skill set, which they're taught by the staff, things about making fires or building shelter or cooking their meals. And through coaching, students learn an enormous amount skills, tolerance, frustration for battling through things that are tough, and then really end up with sort of an enormous sense of efficacy, like, wow, I could do that. And so that's what I think you find in residential treatment that's a little bit different than residential or other forms of out-of-home care.
Well, now, what kind of people, and I notice you have adolescents and young adults, I mean, what kind of describe to us the person who is maybe the best fit for this type of therapy?
The best fit for this type of therapy is a person who is particularly resistant to other kinds of treatment. So if I had a 14-year-old daughter, the first thing that was troubled and was maybe really struggling in school, about to get kicked out or getting in trouble with peers or at home or, you know, in school or in a whole range of settings, the first thing I would do is send my child to speak to a therapist. We'd do a number of family interventions, and then if that wasn't working, we'd go talk to a therapist. Most of the kids that we end up with in wilderness have been through not just one therapist, but many therapists, and sometimes inpatient psychiatric stays, and sometimes other residential treatment programs as well. And they're kids that tend to be, you know, wilderness therapy is not usually a first line of treatment. It's usually a later line, sometimes even a last line. Like, I've tried everything else. I can't think of what else to try. And those are kids that we tend to be particularly successful with, because wilderness is a setting where you don't have a lot of other distractions. You have therapeutically trained field staff and master's or doctoral level clinicians who spend an enormous amount of time and have an enormous amount of patience to deal with the sort of oppositionality and upset that we typically find in our population. So it tends to be a later line of treatment, and those tend to be kids that we're very successful with, kids that are particularly resistant, have a difficult time trusting. Those are kids that are well-suited to wilderness.
Okay, well, I think that actually brings us right into one of the listener questions that was emailed in, and it comes in from someone who says that my 15-year-old son has run away from the local psychiatric facility that he was in. We, at this point, don't know what to do. A, we don't know where he's at, and secondly, if we do find him, would we be better off taking him to a program such as this? Does it provide a sense of security to the point that they can't really run away?
You know, it's a really great question. The wilderness therapy is well suited for some kids and not for others. So kids that have run away can be successfully treated and managed in most wilderness therapy programs, but not all. So Some wilderness therapy programs, particularly the ones that are on the East Coast, programs that are much closer to the front country, to buildings and vehicles and a whole range of populations. Those are programs that I would say are less well suited to kids with a runaway history. Most of the programs that are in the western U.S. are situated in large tracts of public lands. So I would tell the parents, if you're looking for a wilderness therapy program, and I'd need to know a little bit more about their child in order to give them advice about whether or not their child would be particularly well suited to wilderness. But if they were going to look at a wilderness therapy program, I would say make sure you choose one that uses a course area that's really quite far from other people. And the reason is that, unlike in residential treatment, where if a kid acts out or what is often used is restraint. Professionally trained folks will restrain someone to make sure they don't hurt anybody or themselves. In wilderness, oftentimes we'll say, you want to run? Okay. We'll follow you to make sure that you're safe, but feel free. You know, if you need to walk something out, go ahead.
Right.
And so that tends to be really successful for resistant kids, because they'll think, oh, great, I can go. And they'll sort of run themselves out. And what they'll get is, I can't use this as a strategy. It's not, running away isn't working for me.
Right, and it makes them have to face up to the situation. And let me talk directly to the person that may have sent this question in. I would hope that they sent it in hopes that they were listening. If you want to, and I think it's sometime before the end of the show, I'm going to ask Joanna to tell us how we can get in touch with you. But you and or whomever it is that would be the best representative of your program. But if you want to talk, again, you can try and get a hold of Joanna, or because we don't know where you're at geographically, if you email in or if you call in to the Answers for the Family site, we can help direct you to an educational consultant in your area. You know, we can give you other resources that will be able to help you if you want to provide more information. So anyway, but it is a good question. I agree. The other thought that I have in regards to running away is that I definitely agree. There is a certain amount of discouragement, I guess, that comes from the fact that they've gone to a program that is so far away. And from the transport side, we have taken some of those programs you talk about that maybe are on the East Coast or are relatively close now to a city. There are times in which, when we're transporting, we may take even a more circulative route to get there, so that it appears as though it's further away from the city, so that there isn't that temptation. So I certainly agree with what you're saying. Now, let's go a little further in regards to that. Is that, why might a parent want to send their daughter or child to the wilderness program over some of these other treatments, other than the fact that they've already failed in some of those other programs?
You're asking, why would they send them to wilderness?
Right. Why would they send them? And it
absolutely.
Yeah. Even if they haven't necessarily, in other words, one of the reasons you've mentioned is because they have, they've not succeeded in other forms of therapy locally.
Right.
But I think there are some other things too, to where it just happens to be a good fit.
Yeah, that's right. It's a great point. Wilderness tends to be a good fit for adolescents that are struggling, and there's some, I know we'll talk about research in a little bit, but there's some sort of evidence that supports this for kids that are struggling with depression, kids that are struggling with anxiety, kids that are struggling with drug or alcohol abuse, kids that are having a difficult time trusting with or working with others. These are all kids that are well suited to wilderness settings. And we really get a range of kids. Some kids have really minor problems. They've really struggled maybe a semester or two at school, and some kids are really pretty debilitated by their issues. So kids with kind of a range of issues are pretty well suited to wilderness settings.
Well, and I think that you started to bring up research, and it really is one of the questions that I get asked from parents when we're preparing to transport them, and their question is always, how do I know it's safe? Let's talk a little bit about that, because I know, especially dealing with very suburban families, they themselves haven't been out in the wilderness, much less the concept of sending their children out there.
Absolutely. So there is a group of folks that formed the Outdoor Behavioral industry council, and they hired an independent researcher to look at specifically this question, like, how safe are wilderness programs? I'm like, well, let's just put it out there. Let's just figure it out. Like, so that researcher is Keith Russell. He's now at Western Washington University, and he's done some really wonderful work. And one of the things that's so wonderful about what he's done is that he's collected data from programs, you know, without editing. You know, they just sent him flat out all the data that they could get out of their programs, and then he analyzed that data, and then he published it in the peer review press, meaning that it went through a certain amount of kind of rigor in getting out there in the world. And so he's published some really wonderful things. And one of the things that he's actually working on right now with a graduate student has to do with this issue of safety. And so he and one of his students were looking at comparable injury rates between high school sports, things like football or softball, volleyball, and wilderness therapy programs. And what they found is that wilderness therapy programs were many, many times more safe than having your child in a high school sporting activity, which is really kind of a shocking finding, except for folks that ever had an adolescent who was in sports, because those kids get hurt
doing
high school sports, and most of the time they don't in wilderness. We know Keith looked at restraint rates and injury rates and death rates in both residential and in wilderness settings, and found really noticeably that your child is much safer in a wilderness therapy program than in a high school sporting event or in a car with their peers or a whole other range of risks that adolescents are used to in a daily setting.
Right, and I would imagine if you were also talking about some of the inner city public schools, that statistic might be even higher in regards to the potential for harm of some kind.
Absolutely. I want to add, Alan, one more thing,
sure.
Which is that when I'm talking about wilderness therapy programs, I'm really referring to programs that are licensed, experienced, you know, have published safety records, you know, have appropriate oversight by the states that they're operating in. And this isn't the case with all programs. So I really want to encourage your listeners who are parents who are considering sending their kids to programs to make sure that programs are licensed, they're experienced, they have, you know, years of operating time, they don't have any kind of major concerns in terms of their oversight from their, you know, state boards, because not every program is the same. And I think the vast majority of programs are wonderful and really do a great job because they decide really specifically, these are the kids that we can keep safe and these are kids who can't. You know, most wilderness therapy programs won't take kids that are at imminent risk of hurting themselves, because it simply doesn't make sense to take a kid who might really harm themselves way away from, you know, definitive health care. So you really want to make sure that your program, whatever program you're considering, and educational consultants can really help with this in terms of identifying high-quality programs, that those programs have rule-outs, kids that they think they can accept. Like, how violent can a kid be? If the program says, oh, we accept everybody, I'm going to be troubled by that.
Right, and I think that's a great point, and I think if you want to add one more to that, and that is, what is the staff-to-child ratio?
I think that's huge.
I mean, that's huge as far as, you know, you have a wilderness situation out there. You know, how many staff members are they placing out there versus how many kids? Because that's going to say a lot about how much one-on-one work your child is going to get, not to mention the additional safety benefits.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So now what are some of the other things that makes wilderness therapy effective? You know, some of the other differences.
Yeah, so wilderness therapy, I think, is effective for a bunch of reasons. I mean, I think the best studies that have done in this area, again, come from Keith Russell, and they're really qualitative. They're, you know, he gathered narratives from kids that had graduated from wilderness therapy programs and asked them, you know, a year out, 2 years out, if it was helpful, why was it helpful? If it wasn't helpful, why? You know, ask both them and their parents. And so his research shows a bunch of things. One of the things that it shows is that, you know, kids said just being away is helpful. You know, they're away from phones, they're away from computers, they're away from texting. And so time to sort of reflect, a lot of students said that it opened their eyes to what, to really being appreciative for what they had. Being away from it made them appreciative. A number of people said that being out in the nature was actually really helpful. It's for kids that really are overstimulated, kids with attentional problems, have problems with emotion regulation. Those kids find wilderness can be an enormously soothing setting because it's quiet.
Right.
And it's peaceful. Number of students talked about the effect of the group, so having peers who they were able to really connect with and feel supported by, as well as having staff, and also really developing, I spoke to this earlier, sort of a sense of competency, a sense of efficacy, that I really feel like I can do it. So those are, in Keith's research, in his published research, that's some of the things that he identified. And what I would add to that is that, the strongest finding out of the psychotherapy literature, the psychotherapy outcome literature, not just wilderness, but of any modality, is that relationship is really what matters. Mm-hmm. That when our clients are getting better in therapy, it's because they feel cared about and liked by the person who's working with them. And I think we're able to achieve that in wilderness therapy settings to a much greater degree than in a lot of other settings, because we simply have staff that are living there all the time. And so the staff who are sleeping in their sleeping bags right next to students, that are cooking meals with students, that are hiking through, a rainstorm with a student, the student really begins to feel, wow, you're really in this with me. And so I think the staff-student relationship and the contribution that really communicates a sense of care to the student, I really think that really can't be kind of overestimated in terms of the impact that has on outcome.
Well, and I'm glad you touched on that, because that was one of the thoughts that I was having, is the relationship that they have. We deal with so many of these kids afterwards, and they talk about the love that they have for the person that was working with them in that setting. So, and how close they feel. I mean, they stay in contact with them over a long period of time. And I think the other point was, when you brought up the part about stimulation, that just how important that is to be able to get close to them, is because they don't have all this other stimulation. They don't have, 24/7 MTV. They don't have 24/7, just television in general, or music, or whatever it is constantly bombarding them. It really allows them to relax and open their mind and really get in touch with what's important. So I think that's a great point. Now, I know from a research standpoint, that Open Sky is doing some things also. So you've told us a little bit about, from a general standpoint. How about more specifically, what is Open Sky doing on their own from a research standpoint?
Open Sky, thank you for that lead-in. I love to talk about what we do. It's been really exciting. So I'm the research director at Open Sky, and what we've been doing is, from the program's inception a number of years ago, we decided that we needed to not just be looking at whether or not people were satisfied with the services we were providing for them, which is what most programs look at, but we really wanted to look at effectiveness. And so we're using a number of previously developed and empirically validated measures, so measures that other people have used and validated, so that we can compare our results to other people's published measures. So, and their published findings. And so what we have done is to look at how are our kids and families getting better over time. So we measure them at 6 points in time over 2 years. So right when they come, right when they leave, and then 4 more times over the next 2 years. And we measure them in a whole bunch of different ways. We look at their relationships and how are their relationships improving, since that's a particular interest of mine, and I think correlates really strongly with psychotherapy for outcome. And then we look at general mental health distress. Is that getting better, both from the parents' perspective and from the adolescents and the young adults' perspective? And then we're also looking at substance abuse recovery skills. How are they improving, our kids, while they're with us, since the vast majority of our kids come in with some kind of substance or drug abuse problem? Are they able to gain skills which enable them to maintain sobriety after they leave? We're also looking at readiness to change as one of the variables in outcomes. So are our kids able to identify, I have some things and I really need to work on them? Since for many of our kids, wilderness is really the first step in a longer-term treatment plan. So many of our kids, particularly families who know that their kids have, big issues that will take more than, potentially 2 months of intervention, will work with an educational consultant who designs wilderness as the first step. And so what we have noticed in our research is that our kids are really making huge progress In terms of their readiness to change. So this variable about how able am I to recognize that I have things that I need to work on, that we've actually seen really significant shift with from the beginning to end of treatment. So that's been really exciting. So these are the measures that we're using. And then we've really been excited about what we're finding. I know I'm sort of drifting ahead of into what we've found. Do you want to comment on any of that?
No. Please do. I love the fact that you're going into what it is that you found, because I mean that's what research is about. I mean it's one thing to say, look, we've checked all this stuff out, but you know what? What did you find? So I mean you're going in perfectly. So just keep on going.
So it's been really exciting. One of the things that I love about doing research at OpenSky is that when I find things, I then go back to the management team, to all the staff, and I say, this is what I found. I think it has this implication for our program. And they'll say, okay, great. Like, let's change what we're doing, or let's keep doing this, or let's do more of this. And that's so, from a research perspective, it's so exciting to be doing research in this really interactive environment. So what we found is really, really positive. So in terms of general mental health distress, we were using the Youth Outcome Questionnaire, which is developed by a bunch of research down at Brigham Young University a number of years ago. It's a really widely used measure to look at general mental health distress. So it's both parents rating their children's symptoms and also kids rating their own symptoms about depression, anxiety, interpersonal problems, suicidality, a whole bunch of stuff. So what we found is that from the beginning to the end of treatment, our kids look a whole lot better. So they go from this really pretty seriously disturbed clinical range, meaning they need intense clinical support, psychotherapeutic help, to a subclinical range, meaning that their symptoms can really be managed with a lot less support or even on an outpatient basis. And we know for most of our kids that they really need more than outpatient support when they leave. Many of our kids go on to other out-of-home care for a whole range of reasons. And what we found is that our kids that go on to other programs after they leave us, those kids tend to do a little bit better. When we check up with their mental health distress at 1 year out, our kids who are in aftercare programs or have been in aftercare programs, which is to say other out-of-home care, are doing a little bit better than the kids who are at home. So what we're noticing is that aftercare, meaning kind of continued intensive services following OpenSky, actually serves as a protective factor. So that's been really exciting for us. That's research data we just finished analyzing the last couple of months, and we presented it at a couple of conferences recently. And so we've been thrilled to find out that OpenSky is effective at reducing mental health symptomatology. We've also found, and that kids maintain those gains for, a year after they leave and more. And that's been really, really exciting. And that's, kids who are reducing symptomatology and maintaining it are not just the kids in aftercare, but all of our students, both by their own report and by their parents. So that's been really exciting. The other thing that we found that's been really exciting, there's two things. One has to do with substance abuse recovery skills. So this is, our kids who, and again, it's the majority of them, are coming in with some kind of drug or alcohol problem. What we found is that they're able to increase their ability to maintain abstinence. So they're learning skills that enable them to really accurately assess the risks that drugs and alcohol are for them, and then to make good decisions about it. And so that's we've been using a standardized measurement, the Adolescent Relapse Coping Questionnaire, that was developed about 15 years ago, and that's been really exciting. And then the last thing was just to sort of sum up, was that sort of readiness to change. Mm-hmm. So what we've noticed in our program is that from the beginning to the end of treatment, our kids are really recognizing they have some problems that they really need to work on. And that's been exciting because the majority of our adolescent clients are there involuntarily. They're not kids who say, oh, I got a problem, Mom and Dad. I hope you can find some treatment for me.
Right.
They're kids who are saying, my life is fine. Yeah, I do drugs, but no big deal. Or, yeah, I'm getting kicked out of school, but no big deal. Or, yeah, I'm promiscuous. Or, yeah, I'm depressed, but what of it? And so for kids in our program to begin to say, like, I've got some problems and I really need to look at them, and then that readiness to change continues to increase after they leave us, has for us been a really exciting finding.
Well, sure. I mean, that's a huge step. I mean, as soon as they're willing to listen, all of a sudden I think you're halfway there. So I think that's great. I'm excited about all the research and the statistics and the fact that you have it, because for years I've had parents ask me, You know, well, you know, what are the odds that this is going to work out great for my child? You know, and
right.
you know, and I don't have an answer for them. You know, and I refer them to other people that can maybe help them give that information, or I'll explain to them that, you know, a lot of it's going to depend on yourself and what you do from an aftercare situation. You know, don't expect that all of this is going to be done for you. Which kind of leads into, and I've got some more listener questions to go over, but that kind of leads into a little bit about the aftercare. But what I'd like to do, I want to take a break, and can you tell us how can they get a hold of you? There's going to be people that have more questions. If you have more questions, can you give us the website or phone number that they can get a hold of you or to get a hold of Open Sky?
Absolutely. So the best resource for information about Open Sky is our website, which is www.openskywilderness.com. And then to access me directly, they're welcome to email me, which is Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, at openskywilderness.com. And then I'll give a phone number as well, which is just the main Open Sky number, and I can be reached there as well. And that's 970-382-8181.
Great. All right. We are listening to Dr. Joanna Bettman, and we will be back in about 1 minute. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, we're back with Dr. Joanna Bettman. And we want to touch on some of the listener questions. First, I want to tell the listeners thank you so much for your questions. We appreciate them. I will always try to get to all the questions. And I have one that says that in the press release I saw that you said that there is no typical teenager. And if that's the case, it says, if there is no typical teenager, then is there one common denominator which is effective to teach teenagers how to cope with life's challenges?
Yeah, so they're asking for strategies, basically. Sort of how do you help increase adolescents' coping skills?
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, so what I would say to that is that most adolescents need to be taught something about emotion regulation. How do they manage their own emotions? And I think most kids, particularly boys in our culture, but really everybody, aren't really given good education or support for A, identifying emotion, or B, expressing it. And in terms of really managing stressors and coping in difficult challenges, being able to say, first, I'm feeling angry, or I'm feeling anxious, or I'm feeling stressed, to identify that in yourself rather than acting it out, which is what happens when people are using drugs or drinking often, is that they don't even identify with it. They're just reaching for something without being able to even identify the emotion that precipitated the behavior. And so being able to identify emotion and then to express it and to say, I'm anxious, Mom, or I'm upset, or and so being able to teach our adolescents skills for identifying and expressing emotion really helps us in being able to merely meet their needs. So this is, there's sort of a complex set of skills that kids need to learn when they're growing up in order to really become adults with good coping skills, and these are two of the biggies.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you just touched on something in regards to when they become adults. Another question that was emailed in says, isn't this a theme that runs through adults' lives as well? Do you work with It says the parents. And I was going to ask the question anyway about aftercare, but I think this might be a good way to slip right into that.
Yeah, so when we were designing Open Sky a number of years ago, all of us had, or nearly all of us that were founding the program, had worked in wilderness for, you know, a decade or more. And so we really decided that, and all of us came from places that had a really strong family therapy component. And as we were designing the program, we looked at the literature that in terms of adolescent treatment, and what we found is that kids who do better after programs tend to be kids where there's a maximum of family involvement. And so when we designed Open Sky, we tried to design a program that had both kind of a maximum of clinical sophistication and a maximum of family involvement. And so we designed all of these things that went above and beyond what other programs were doing. So both we were involving parents on a weekly level, having weekly phone calls with their child, with the Open Sky therapist for their child, and, you know, assignments for them to complete, things around that helped them introduce them to skills that the child was getting. And then we also have this weekly phone call where parents can call in both for psychoeducation and support with a whole community of other parents whose children are at Open Sky. And then we have Wellness Weekend where parents are invited out to come spend the weekend in Durango, which is where our office is. And they come not to spend time with their children who are in treatment, but to spend time with other parents. And we teach them a whole skill set that kids are learning in the field around, you know, again, identifying and expressing emotion, learning tools to manage emotion, things like things that help with stress reduction, like meditation or yoga, which are things that we teach our kids in the field, and you know, hiking and spending time working on, you know, relaxation skills. So all of these things are things that we spend time with on Wellness Weekends with parents. And then when the program is almost at the end, we invite parents to spend a few days out in the wilderness with their child and with our clinical team, really working through some issues in preparation for the next step. Family treatment, that's what we do at Open Sky, and the research supports this. You know, you can't treat kids in isolation, and, you know, the best treatment outcomes for adolescents in residential treatment, and even there's really almost no research on young adults in wilderness setting, although we're trying to change that. We're going to contribute to the published literature in that area. So what we're relying on is the published literature around adolescent residential treatment, and we know from that families have to be involved. They may not be part of the problem, but they have to be part of the solution.
Well, I've been accused of having not grown up, so where can I sign up? We need to sign me up. No, that's great. And now taking that also now with aftercare, how long afterwards? Because I think that's sort of been a pet peeve for me over the years, having done this for 30 years and dealt with some of the families and seen some of the ones that come back. In other words, I mean, if things don't work out, I'm the one that finds out because they're calling me to go find them. You know, they've come home, things haven't gone well, they've run away, now they're calling me, we're finding them, we're taking them now to another program. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing afterwards so that everything cements in. They stick with the program.
Yeah, it's really critical. I can't say enough about that. So, I mean, all of our families are really encouraged to continue ongoing family therapy with the therapists at their own location. WinSky is now developing a whole range of alumni resources as well for families that feel like, you know, either they want to send their child back to sort of touch base with skills that they developed in the past, or for entire families that want to come spend time, we're developing trips for them to, you know, go on rafting trips with us or come go on hiking trips with us and things like that. So we have some resources for people to come back to Open Sky and touch base. But I think really, you know, the biggest thing is, rather than kind of a one-time sort of touch base, is an ongoing. So, you know, as soon as my child leaves treatment, I can't say, all right, well, now we're done with family therapy. It needs to, you know, the investment in really supporting the child's change has to be in showing the parents a willingness to make change in their lives. Again, even if the parents can say, well, my life was great, it's my child, the one with the problem, okay, I'll hear that. And at the same time, if you're going to support your child, you need to be part of the solution. And that means being willing to make change. Like, okay, maybe we won't be having alcohol in the house right now. Or maybe we'll all be spending every Sunday evening having a family meeting where we talk about how the behavioral contract is going, and let's touch base and what's working and what's not working. And so really having an ongoing commitment to some family therapy objectives is really critically important.
Right. And as you said that about the parent that says, well, yeah, but my life's great. And the thought that goes through my mind is that, you know, at the time in which you became a parent, did at some point, did it kick in? It's not all about you.
Right.
They don't always want to hear that. Sometimes I can get away with saying that where maybe somebody else in a different position can't. But yeah, it is amazing sometimes. So now, and again, we've got some more questions. I'm looking at the time. I want to make sure that we get all of them in. And I also like to finish, so I'll warn you now, I love to finish with success stories. And it's especially the way I started this show off. I really want to make sure we finish with some success stories.
Sounds great.
But now, let's talk about the one of the questions that came in. Again, a listener question is you know, how long is the program? So let's talk about that. And then I have a more detailed question that also came in from a parent.
Sure. So Open Sky, the average length of stay is about 7 or 8 weeks, but it can be customized. So some of our young adults specifically will come in for 4 or 5 weeks and sort of just take it from there. Our average length of stay tends to be about 7 or 8 weeks, and we keep some students longer because we develop an individualized treatment plan for every student who's with us. So for some, their treatment goals are bigger, they take a little longer, and for some, they take a little bit less time. So that's how we work.
Okay. Now, let me get this question because it's in more detail. It says, is your program co-ed? My 14-year-old daughter, who has been doing drugs and sleeping around, needs to go away to get some help.
Sure. So I'm assuming from that the daughter has been sleeping around with boys, and our adolescent groups are single sex. So our young adult group is co-ed.
Mm-hmm.
They're young adults. They're usually about 18 to 28 are young adults, and so mm-hmm. that's a co-ed group that they're in for the most part. And our adolescent groups are always single sex. So we have adolescent boys groups and adolescent girls groups, and they come together for things like community meditation, which is heavily supervised, but they spend the bulk of their program entirely separate.
Okay. Well, good. And again, the types of questions sometimes, and even as you said that, the thought crossed my mind is that they weren't really even specific from the standpoint of that. And that's one of the questions that we ask, for instance, like if we're transporting, we will ask if there's a comment like that, just as you did. I mean, you know, you say that this is happening. With what sex is it happening? Because that may have a bearing on who we place them with. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Very good point. And it says... okay, wait, I touched on that. Okay, let me go into some success stories. So we've talked about the aftercare, which is nice. I think that also helps to have those success stories. You know, from a transport standpoint, we don't always get to hear them, and I've always said that's the one thing that we're missing because we're not in contact with them afterwards. The fact that you are doing the aftercare means you are in contact with them, and I think that helps to have more knowledge, and it probably helps your own staff to be able to have that connection for a longer period of time. Everybody wins. That would be my guess.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so wonderful when we hear from students that have left the program. You know, they're writing to our staff or to our naturopaths, which is our natural doctors, or they're writing to our therapists or, you know, even our office staff and saying, you know, we're so grateful, or let me tell you what we're doing now, or, you know, here are the challenges we're working through, but we feel like we got great tools at Open Sky to work through them. And all of that is so exciting. It's really enormously meaningful for us. You know, plastered over one of office walls at Open Sky is just those kinds of letters from families, from students saying, here are the things that I feel like I learned, and thank you.
All right. We've got about 5 minutes. Can you give me one or two success stories that parents can listen to and say, I can see that being my child?
Sure. So I think I'll talk more generally just to protect our clients' privacy. You know, one of our early students was a young adopted girl who was really struggling in terms of her ability to have positive relationships. She was finding herself really drawn to the opposite sex. She was quite promiscuous. She was really struggling in school and with attention and focus. And her parents are really worried about her. And when she came, really what we focused on was the sort of really increasing emotion regulation skills to kind of identify what's happening inside. And one of the things we didn't talk about, Alan, has to do with sort of open skies, sort of holistic focus, mm-hmm. which is, you know, we believe in kind of healing the person from the inside out. So, you know, all of our students get this organic whole foods diet and naturopathic care in addition to kind of general medical care. And we believe that all of this sort of, you know, healing, you know, from extremely healthy whole foods, you know, and then also working on, you know, psychological management skills, you know, stress reduction skills, teaching them things like yoga and meditation, all of these things, I would say general to our whole population, we think really contribute to our outcome pretty significantly. And with this student specifically, you know, what she learned was, you know, when I'm upset, I don't need to, you know, call this boy and go sleep with him. So the student, through a combination of learning skills in the field, learning a sense of her own competency, like, wow, I can make a fire, and wow, I can build my own shelter, I can even cook a meal for my group. You know, when her parents came at the end of the program, being able to cook a meal for them, being able to show them how, you know, when what high regard she was held by her own group of peers, by the girls she was with, and really being able to sort of translate some of the sort of sense of competency that she developed in the 7 or 8 weeks she was with us to show her family, I think really was pretty significant for her. And when we heard from her after she left, she was really able to hang on to a whole skill set around, you know, identifying emotion, managing emotion, and being able to share it, you know, through the family work that she and her family had done while she was with us. She was really able to share it with her family and say, here's what I need from you, and here's what's happening with me. And, you know, her sort of general enthusiasm for being healthy and being around healthy peers really continued. I know I'm painting in fairly general terms to protect client privacy,
but that's okay.
That's inspiring to folks to hear. Like, these kinds of things happen all the time, every day.
Well, it is, and what I'm getting out of that is that it increased her self-esteem, it increased her self-worth, it made her more confident, which allowed her to speak to the things that she needed to continue to grow, and that's what I get out of it. So thank you for that. Now, what I want to do is also add for you to go back and share with some of your staff the fact that since going to the yoga class that they had, I have since personally joined yoga, and I am going as well. So
that's awesome. That's so fabulous. You know, people are always kind of shocked to learn that there's actually research that supports yoga as a stress reduction technique. I mean, there's this stuff is published in the medical literature. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's actually, I'm so happy to hear that, Alan. That's awesome.
So anyway, thank you. We're running out of time, but thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. You know, I look forward to getting out there myself. I think that'll be great.
Oh, I hope you do sometime soon. We'd love to see you. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye now. Now, for anybody, if you have comments or suggestions in regards to this show or any other show, go to www.answersforthefamilyblog.com. If you would want to listen to past shows or you have comments, we look forward to them. I will put them on the air if we can. And remember, seek to catch someone doing something good every day. Thank you.